you know, we're the ones that keep it wicked. Rock and roll, all good, mix it up, that's my ticket. Cruising in my Cadillac Escalade.
Good evening and welcome to episode 48 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Erin Campbell. Summertime is a time where people are normally really happy that they're not in school and they're celebrating being out of school. Meanwhile, I am contemplating going back to school. Here to give me all the dirt on the school that he runs for his online players, say hello to Chris Keel from MTGO Academy. Hello.
Hi, everyone.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good. So MTGO Academy, are there uniforms?
We have t-shirts, if that counts. I'm pretty sure that I may be the only staffer that actually has t-shirts. But so I would say no, there aren't really uniforms.
It's funny because it's like that at Legit, too. Like I know Medina has a Legit shirt. Scotty has a Legit shirt. Heather, I think, either made one or somehow got one for Vegas. And the rest of us are like, come on. Like, what do we need to do? Like, we want Legit shirts, too. And Medina's very slick. He's like, I'll get you one. I'll get you one. And I'm excited to go to Gen Con in August. And I'm like, I am not going to have a shirt for Gen Con, am I?
Well, this is completely off topic, but I don't know if you're aware, I'm actually based in Indianapolis, and I'm also excited to go to Gen Con this year.
Oh, that's fantastic. So does that mean that if John stiffs me on a Legit shirt, that you'll give me an MTGO Academy shirt to make up for it?
I refuse to answer this question.
Oh, I would love that. I promise I will give you lots of press, and I will tell everybody about your site when they ask me what's on my t-shirt. How about that?
Deal. You got a t-shirt.
Fantastic. But there is a catch, though. You have to wear a Deck Tees sticker somewhere on your person.
On my person?
On your person.
So like my actual skin or on my clothing person?
Well, if you're committed to me and my cause, you'll put it on some skin. But I'll settle for like a t-shirt or, you know, the leg of your shorts or whatever.
Okay, let's get into these negotiations after we're done recording the episode.
Ooh, I like where this is going. So the reason I wanted you on the show, Chris, is because you are the man behind MTGO Academy, and you do hold an important position there. And I've been very interested in the site for a while, and I've been very interested in all things online. And there's a lot that I don't know about online, and I do feel a little bit out of the loop when it comes to Modo. So I'm hoping mm-hmm. that you can sort of help me dispel some of those things and just give me a better understanding of what it's like to play mostly online. So,
okay, I'll try to do my best.
Fantastic. So before we begin, let's go ahead and talk about your site. Let's talk about MTGO Academy a little bit. So how exactly did the site get started, and what made you guys decide that you wanted to be a site that focused on just online?
Well, the story is probably kind of long.
Go for it.
I don't know how familiar you are with the history of Magic Online.
I'm not. But I actually didn't even know it was, what, 11 years old, is it?
Yes.
It I didn't
came
know that.
Out, I think it came out sometime during Odyssey Block.
That's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah, and they've had 3.5, 4-ish iterations now. I think the wide beta is actually considered version 4.
Okay.
Or was considered version 4 at some point, and they're kind of getting away from the typical versioning system.
Okay.
But I met Marin, the founder of MTGO Academy, in 2008, mm-hmm. I believe, right after they switched to the previous version that we use. I don't know. Do you use the beta client, or do you use the the brown and gray client version 3?
I'm using the current client right now. I do have the beta, but you know, I just found it very confusing, and there was nothing wrong with it, but it just wasn't, things weren't where I'm used to them being. Mm-hmm. So I found that I was screwing up plays and things like that. And I was like, you know, unless I'm doing something a bit more casual, I need things to be where I'm used to them being. And it just ended poorly. So
join the club. The last time I tried to play on the beta, when I was adding my lands, my deck doubled.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was an interesting bug.
See, I didn't have anything like that. It was just more, like I said, where things were, where, you know, I would go to hit a button and that button was not where I expected it to be. And then I was hitting another button. And before I know it, you know, my Uvenwald tracker is fighting with an Avacyn's Pilgrim instead of the Predator Ooze that was meant to kill the Loxodon Smiter that I intended it for, and all sorts of shenanigans. And they were like, do you know how to play this game? And I'm like, I do, honest, as I'm just hitting stuff. And yeah.
It's not me. It's the program.
So you met Marin.
Yes. And we were both in the auction room. I'm actually not sure if the auction room is around still. It might be more of like a chat place.
Okay.
But it used to be like the center where dealers would try to buy and sell large lots of cards, or just people that wanted to move something that they couldn't sell on the classifieds and they didn't want to sell it to one of the automatic traders, the bots on Magic Online.
Okay.
They would try to sell it through the auction room. And we would just talk every now and then. And I was really into Singleton at the time, which is Highlander and paper. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the format, but it's basically like EDH, okay. You know, one of a card. And only you start with 20 life, and there's no general related deck building okay. restrictions. So we're playing a lot of Singleton and doing a lot of trading. And I was kind of value trading and speculating to build my collection, and Marin was also. He had actually decided that he was only going to spend the $10 that came with an account mm-hmm. and trade his way up into a collection.
So sort of like some of these guys are doing like FNM hero type stuff, like Adam Prozac and Medina.
Well, I think it's actually closer to Pack to Power.
Okay.
But since the Magic Online market is more efficient than the paper market, the card prices will change more quickly mm-hmm. and like in smaller intervals. And at that time, the bots weren't as sophisticated in their pricing.
Okay.
So you could do a lot of arbitrage, and Marin would do that and just build his collection by buying from one person and selling to another. So trading time for money. Mm-hmm. So we had been interacting a lot and just talking about different ways to make tickets through the program and like trying to find resources. And we were figuring out a lot of weird things about the program because we were just using it so much. I had switched completely to Magic Online around Time Spiral. Mm-hmm. And then, or I guess, what's that game after Time Spiral? Lauren Block?
I'm not sure. I actually was not playing when those sets came out. I didn't come back until Innistrad.
It may have actually been Lorwyn, because I think that Magic Online switched during Morning Tide.
Okay.
But that's kind of like a side note. It's kind of an awkward time period for me. Like, I was going through school, and I was spending a lot of my free time in between classes just playing Magic Online.
Mm-hmm.
So let's think. So I was playing Singleton with Marin, doing a lot of trading, and he was just talking about how there's no sites to assist with just stuff related to Magic Online. And I think there was one site at the time, Pure MTGO, the site that's connected with MTGO traders. Mm-hmm. But they just had like small articles and stuff, but there was nothing focused on how to introduce a person to Magic Online, because it's kind of a different beast than playing paper Magic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's the same game, but the experience is quite a bit different, at least for me it is. I'm not sure if it's the same for you.
It's definitely different.
And he had gone to Babson College in Boston and was really into business and had been doing like some business consulting for another website and just thought, hey, I want to start a website. So I had some friends that had skills that could help start like a blog website mm-hmm. or like a webzine, whatever you want to call it, and got him in touch with them. And then he registered a domain that had like a educational magic sort of feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
And started kicking off the site. Like, we were just a blog for a long time, and then eventually got into the monetization through the storefront.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's definitely a lot bigger focus. Like, I spend most of my time doing store-related activities.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still will work with our editor and do stuff on the blog side of the site, but we definitely have gone toward being more of like a store and a content portal as opposed to just a content portal.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really popular model for several websites, is to do the blog and the store kind of thing. And, you know, one of the things I'm always curious about is whether or not the site started off as a blog and then picked up a store, or if they are a store that just happens to have a blog. Because I do feel that you can tell that from looking at a website. You know, your site is one of them, those that also has both of those things. With that said, though, you know, Chris, what do you think makes your site different than all those other blogs that happen to have stores attached?
Well, you've kind of touched upon it. We do have a lot of beginner-focused information on our site. And then our site is, like, I guess not Magic Online specific, but almost all of our content is done through Magic Online and written by Magic Online players. Whereas you'll see a lot of people that I would call like paper Magic personalities, and they'll play on Magic Online, you know, doing streaming or playtest sessions or a draft recording. But most of the people that produce content for our site are just focused through Magic Online. Like, that's how they play every week. They might like play EDH with their friends or something, but if they want to get their competitive fix, they'll join an 8-4 queue or like play a DE. And the and then just like the store model itself, there aren't very many Magic Online storefronts still, because the interface in the client is kind of awkward, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Oh yeah.
And like in paper, if you want to start a Magic Online business, you know, you can buy, I think it's called Crystal Commerce or whatever, and sell cards through the internet, and then you've got like your database, and you've got a room in a warehouse or something that's filled with cards. You know, you ship orders and all you have to do is just find people that have collections and buy them. But on Magic Online, like the interfacing with the people that have the cards and transferring them to an account to sell requires technical implementation. So like we have a bot chain, and then I have utilities that I can manipulate a lot of data related to all the cards we have or something like, or I can manipulate all of the data for the cards that we have in our collection and figure out like what's changing and just maintain the inventory, which is not something that is easy to do unless you have actual programs custom built. So.
Right. Which of those things would you say that the site is more devoted to? Like, would you say that it's more invested in the storefront part, or would you say that it's more invested in the blog, or would you say that it's about a 50-50 split?
We're trying to become more of a 50-50 split. It definitely has a lot more time and effort put into the blog part, which might be to our own detriment. But
why would you say that?
Well, it needs to be able to support itself, so it has to make some money.
Okay.
But the like the actual daily blog posts, the daily content we have, is our primary content right now. And we're waiting for the next version of Magic Online to come out until we actually revamp all of our beginner tutorials.
Okay.
But I actually personally care the most about the beginner tutorials because like I talked about earlier, there's really nowhere on the net that even Wizards themselves that explains all the nuances of the program and like how you can find trading partners, like how to use all the shortcut keys on the keyboard to play games, and just like the different resources that can help out a Magic Online player.
So let's talk about that beginner section for a little bit, because that was one of the things, Chris, that really stood out to me about your site, was it was very plain out there that you had this. You know, I've seen some websites that, you know, they have those resources, but you really have to dig for them. And that, I think that's a little bit unfair. You know, why do you feel that more sites don't cater directly to their newer readers or to people that are newer to the game? Why do you think that might be?
Well, I think that beginner content has a very specialized market, and people quickly outgrow that. Like, someone's only a beginner for so long, hopefully, hopefully for their sake. So it's not really, this is kind of awkward, it's not like sexy content to produce.
Sure.
You know, it's not like, I won a pro tour and this is how I did it and this is my story. It's a tutorial. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't like to spend their time making tutorials, really. At least I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has like a sort of mechanical satisfaction to it. Like, you do a really good job on a project. When you're making a beginner tutorial, you can really see that at the end of the project.
But it also seems like, if I can interrupt you for a second, it seems mm-hmm. like I would think that the beginner content would be a bit more timeless. Like, for example, when I was a blogger for a while, I wrote blogs for World of Warcraft, or for my, I had a World of Warcraft blog, and I was a healer, and I would write guides, and I would write guides, and then the guides would last until the next patch or whatever, the next expansion would come. And then in the meantime, I would write posts about my raids or my guild or, you know, PvP that I was doing. And one thing I always found was that, you know, the posts that were sort of coming out every other day would certainly get a good amount of traffic and get a good amount of feedback, but it was those posts that I could write once, let it sit for 6 months, and those would always attract the most attention. And I would be inclined to think that a really good tutorial, which can get some mileage, would do a lot better than a competitive post, because the metagames are always changing, decks are constantly going in and going out. You know, I would think that, you know, those beginner posts would be more attractive, at least in terms of visits, and especially considering how, you know, how small the population is that has those competitive aspirations versus the, I believe that there's a very large casual market that's just not even being tapped right now. And I would even say it's there's more of them than there are competitive minded players. And I just see a gold mine there. I see a lot of untapped resource there. And I just wonder why people don't cater to that. I can see that. I mean, do you see that?
I think your feeling on the matter is spot on. Mm-hmm. From what I've heard of, or from Wizards staff, like, they still know that the majority of their players are kitchen table warriors, or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. Like, they might go to a card shop and buy some cards, or like hang out at an F&M once every now and then, but they're not going to go to PTQs. They're not going to like play daily events. They're not going to draft every day. Mm-hmm. And the beginner content for Magic Online, especially, or I mean, maybe even just Magic in general, is something that can appeal to them or anyone that is thinking about the game. And like you said, the content just sits there and accrues views over time.
Yeah.
Where if you have a draft video, like Luis Scott Vargas drafts RTR block 18, like, you might have 10,000 people watch that video or something, but once the week has passed or once the season has passed, not very many people are going to be interested in watching it. Mm-hmm. And that's entirely accurate. Our number one viewed page is actually a tutorial. Mm-hmm. By a lot.
With that said, though, you know, do you feel that online is more of a way to go for people who are new to Magic? Like, if you had a friend who had never played before and you were trying to get them into the game, would you be more inclined to give them a paper deck and send them to F&M? Or would you be more inclined to give them $10 and say, here's Magic Online, learn this way?
I might be most inclined to say, or to ask them if they have like an Xbox or a PS3, and okay, say, you should get Duels of the Planeswalkers if you're interested in this and if you like it. And then there's a rabbit hole to fall down into.
Well, let's assume that they've already done that. So, like, let's assume, because okay, I know, because I agree with you, Chris. I agree that Duels is a great first step for a lot of people, and even for people who've been gone a while. Because, again, mm-hmm, with me, a lot of my followers I know through the World of Warcraft world, and they've had some contact with Magic at some point, and they see me tweet about it, and they're like, God, that looks like fun, and they'll pick up Duels and have a really good time. But eventually, they'll be like, they'll consume it, and they'll be like, now what? And I'm like, I don't know. And, you know, so assuming somebody's, you know, done that and they've chewed up Duels and spit it out, would you then point them to F&M and Paper Magic, or would you encourage them to learn more online?
I think it depends what a person wants out of the game.
Okay.
Like, if you want to have a social gaming experience, I would definitely look into Paper Magic before I look into Magic Online.
Okay.
I think that one of the weaknesses of Magic Online right now really is that it it doesn't enable a social experience very much. I'm not sure if this is how you feel about the game, but whenever I play, like half of the things that people chat to me in a game are something that I wish they would just keep to themselves. Mm-hmm. One of the funniest things that ever actually happened, my editor and I, we lived together for a little while. We're recording a pre-release for like Innistrad Block or something. And after one of the rounds, an opponent messaged us, "Hey, I hope you feel good, you and your small penis," or something like that. And then, this is the craziest part. The next round, we beat another person, and he messages us and like talks about our penis size again. Obviously, he didn't know there was two of us sitting there laughing at him, and he was being recorded for a video that went up on our website, and I'm pretty sure we didn't edit it out, which is maybe kind of a dick move on my part. But like this, the social experience on Magic Online can be quite miserable. Mm-hmm. Like it's either not there or it's negative because you get gamer rage.
Right. Is that something that you feel eventually does bleed over into paper Magic? Like, have you gone to events and seen people be more distant or seen people not be as social and wondered if maybe Magic Online is responsible for that?
I would never blame Magic Online for it.
Okay.
I would just blame people.
Okay.
I do see it in paper events, too.
Okay. Yeah, I've actually, full disclosure, I've been known to be snarky online, but I think it's one of those things that would translate better if I was in person. Like, for example, last night I was playing a Reanimator guy, and I had typed in, "Smile if you're playing Reanimator," and I got nothing, of course. And then he wanted to play the graveyard game, as Reanimator likes to do. Mm-hmm. So I, of course, was about to cast Deadbridge Chant, and I'm like, "All right, let's do this, graveyard, baby." And I said something along the lines of, "Race ya," and I put down my Deadbridge Chant. And, you know, so they were things that I thought I was being sort of fun, and mm-hmm. he did not take them to be fun. And he was just like, "You know, what are you trying to do?" He's like, "I'm beating you." And I'm like, oh, really? So at that point, I'll admit that I didn't show as much restraint as I would have in paper. Mm-hmm. And I'll admit I got shitty with him. And then I did throw a little shade his way or whatever. And I don't know. I think at the same time, like you said, that online makes people feel safer to not have to converse or to motivate people that they don't have to be social. I think it also takes away those inhibitions because they don't know who you are. They're never going to see you. So they can say whatever they want to you. I've actually had the opposite problem. I've said things to people that I thought I would never see on Magic Online. And then I got really – there was one guy I think that had a Twitter handle in his profile. And I was like, "Let's see who this fuckstick is." And I went to go look him up, and he had like 700 followers. And on Twitter it says
like, oh.
Right. And then it says like who you share followers with. And it's like followed by Jackie Lee, you know, Gavin Verhey. And I'm like, so that kind of motivated me to watch my P's and Q's because you never know, and that can backfire on you really quickly.
Yeah, you could have seen a screenshot of your pithy comment on Twitter,
right? And you know, me being me, it's like, well, it might mean more listens or downloads. I just, controversy is good for that, you know. But no, that's something I need to work on. I'll admit I'm a little guilty of that, but I don't know. I think for me, at least, the reason why I tend to behave that way online is because I don't have people to calm me down. Whereas if I'm at an event and I've done really poorly in a match, I can walk away. I have a friend in the hallway. I have a friend mm-hmm. watching me. I can immediately turn to them and be like, "This is what sucked," and I can dump on them. But when I'm alone, sitting in my computer chair in my underwear eating gummy worms, what am I going to do? Like, I have no one to turn to. Yeah, I can tweet somebody, but it's not the same.
You can throw your gummy worms at the wall or gummy bears.
I very well could, but I just feel like without having anyone there to dump on, there's really nowhere else for that vitriol to go but to them. And I'm not saying it's right, but that's sort of why I tend to misbehave online. So,
but that is one of the more awkward things about Magic Online. Like, it removes the, "Hey, I'm with a group of my friends" aspect of the game. Which I think a lot of people, from like someone that will just go to FNM, even to like someone that will take a red eye home from a Grand Prix, like they all have large groups of friends at these events. So they get like a social outtake of their experience. And the way that chat is structured on Magic Online and like the clan system, and it doesn't have really any integration with popular social media or anything, you don't get this social aspect that you expect from the game if you play paper.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I was just going to say, one of the things that I'd like to see potentially maybe is a voice chat system. Do you think mm-hmm. that might make it more personal?
Well, I think that it could make it more miserable.
Oh, really?
My experience playing like Halo 2 or something online where you just have someone running around like cursing at you and it sounds like they haven't gone through puberty yet.
Okay.
And thinking, what did your mother teach you? I think that something like that could happen if it was just like a free roll voice system, like your opponent could chat to you and you'd have to like mute magic online not to hear them.
Ew,
but if they had like a voiceover IP that you could opt into, especially like if you're going to play Commander or something, or like playtest with one of your friends, it would be nice to have it in the program. Mm-hmm. But I bet that Wizard just expects people to use Skype or like Vent or whatever if they want to chat.
Right. So a few weeks ago, MTGO hosted a beta spotlight, and they gave a lot of people a chance to play the beta. And from what I could see, the response was really, 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 really negative. largely, people did not like it. People don't like the current client right now. Being that I'm sort of new to it and being that I don't spend a lot of time on it, where is all this dislike coming from? And can you understand why people feel that way?
Yes, I can. I think that it gets blown out of proportion a lot of the time.
Okay.
Magic Online does do a good job of what it's primarily supposed to do, and that's let you play Magic.
Anytime like, you want.
Yeah, the rules engine, for the most part, works really well. I mean, there's always like a list of bugs for cards that don't interact correctly, or someone will like play a crazy card in Commander and find out that if you copy it with Mirari, then like the game crashes. Our editor actually went through a period where he just would make decks that would have all the different clones that he could think of and try to like turn a Dryad Arbor into like a blue enchantment or something like that through a chain of clones. And then he got into this sequence where if he logged into Magic Online, the game and the client would just immediately crash. Mm-hmm. And like he couldn't log back in until it got cleared from the game buffer because it was like an untimed game.
I just remember there was a bug a short time ago where I guess Pillar of Flame wasn't exiling things.
Yeah.
And there were people that were like, there were Lotla trolls and Stranglerout geists that were allowed to live. And I'm like, really? If that's the whole reason you're claiming you lost an event, you need to rethink your life.
Well, that was actually kind of a big shitstorm. Like, the bug appeared right before one of the championship series, like, in-game tournaments.
Okay.
And it was standard for the format.
Okay.
So, since creatures wouldn't be exiled from Pillar of Flame, like, Zombies, I think, was three of the top... It was, like, Jund Zombies, three of the four top decks. I mean, it's kind of interesting to think about it, because it's, like changing a map in an RTS game.
Okay.
So it forces the metagame to evolve a little.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if Magic was just on Magic Online, they could ban and unban cards all the time.
Okay.
It wouldn't be that big of a deal because people can quickly sell and buy cards.
Yeah.
Like paper, you know, you have to go to your local game store, see if they have it in stock, get on the internet, order it, have it shipped to you. And, you know, it's kind of a gigantic hassle where if you want a card on Magic Online, you can get it in like 10 minutes for most cards.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say are some of the biggest complaints about the online client that either you have or that you've heard other people have?
I think the biggest gripe is just that it's behind modern program design,
mm-hmm.
like definitely modern game design.
Okay.
And like the user interface just harkens back to a very antiquated period.
Okay.
And it's always kind of been like that, but it also ties into the fact that there's usually like a memory leak attached to this bloated client.
Mm-hmm.
So then the longer you have the program open, the more of your system resources it's using up, and then you're using a program that looks like it would be new in 1998, and you're using like a gig of system resources or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like the biggest complaint, but then there's a lot of little things in it that people also don't like. Mm-hmm. But if they got the design right, so like you could intuitively figure out how to play your friend in Magic. Mm-hmm. And then the program didn't take more system resources than like some high-end games, then people would be pretty happy.
Mm-hmm. What are some complaints that you have about it?
My personal complaints, I don't like how organized play is really run on Magic Online. I think that it's a much different beast than paper Magic. They used to have something like a league play on Magic Online a long time ago.
Okay.
It was like 2007 prior. They had Sealed Deck League. Mm-hmm. And you would join and you could play like a month for your $25 or whatever. And it was a nice way to get a lot of entertainment for a low bang. And like you don't have to buy a deck, you just buy your packs and play. And then like each week you can buy another pack and add it to your deck if you want. And like some sort of improvement on this league system makes sense to me for a game that you just want to be able to come home from work, log into, and play like maybe one match, maybe three matches. Maybe you want to like go on a bender for 8 hours. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the way that the program is structured currently, you don't really have a lot of options to get your fix without committing a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really even like the beta client is horrible complaint. It's more of like an organized play initiative within the client.
Gotcha. So it sounds like with everybody being so vocal about the game and you had indicated that in terms of how dated it looks, that it's been dated for a while. Why do you think it's taken Wizards so long to respond to all of the criticism and just why do you feel they're not addressing it? Because it does look like it's not being addressed and it does look like it's, I mean, I've been a part of games that have been in beta and none have been as long as this. So what do you think is going on there from the Wizard side of things?
Well, in the last project or version release that they had, it was a complete disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it went dark. It was supposed to come back up 2 weeks later. It didn't meet that deadline. And when it did come back up, nothing worked.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people left. Card values tanked. You couldn't play events for a long, long time.
Card values tanked?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, because no one's playing and everyone's just like, this game is horrible. I'm selling my collection.
Wow. That seems a bit rash to me. Like, wow. Like...
It probably was, but I mean, if you think that something's never going to improve, then you just want to get some salvage out of the value you put into it, all the money that you've sunk into it. So I guess that just a lot of people were tired of it. They're fed up. The game was crashing a lot because of server overload before they switched to the new version.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of why they were pressured to do it so quickly. They would get like 2,500 people playing events and then they would have server crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Because the infrastructure wasn't meant to handle that server load. And that's one of the things that they really focused on with the version 3, the current client.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we have this stability, I mean, it crashes every now and then, but it's pretty infrequent.
Okay.
They have extra time to develop it, but I imagine that Wizards is just probably like going home from work and drinking a whiskey and taking a Xanax and just like completely stressed out with the project. I don't know. Have you done any like software development or projects like development projects?
No, I can barely get Excel spreadsheets to work for me. Like I am so not techie girl.
Kind of one of the interesting things that I get to do working with MTGO Academy is we do a lot of development for our back end and trying to improve the website.
Okay.
And our projects, I mean, it's just like launch a new web page or something like that, which isn't that hard.
Okay.
And I am constantly having headaches, staying up a lot longer than I imagine, trying to eke out little issues. and brainstorming new ways to fix things. I imagine that Wizards, all even though their project team is probably decently large, that they have all of these issues magnified. But I think that if they had outsourced it a long time ago, that we probably wouldn't be here, and that's why a lot of people are just pissed.
Do you think that there's a part of Wizards that maybe feels like this is just not enough of a priority right now, where their priority isn't paper magic?
I have a hard time figuring that out. Okay. I do know that Magic Online brings in a lot of income for them as a company.
I think I saw somewhere it was 35 to 50% of the business, was it?
I heard a similar stat. Yeah. I heard it was like 45% of their North American business was through Magic Online.
Okay, that's huge.
Yeah, it's gigantic, but that's with the current situation we have, which isn't good. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not what it could be. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not ideal.
Right.
And they, probably the higher-ups are thinking, well, it's broke, but people are still spending money, so why fix it?
That's a terrible attitude to have. Again, I would look at it from the sort of like I look at the casual audience and see a large untapped resource. I look at it the opposite. If you're already, you know, getting 40% of your business from this broken resource, imagine what you could do if the resource was operating at like 80% efficiency or like, you know, 90% efficiency. Not even saying that it needs to be perfect, because what is, but I would just think if we spruce it up a little bit, maybe it could be 50% of our business. Maybe it could be, you know, 55% of our business. That's how I would look at it. I wouldn't settle for that 40%. I would consider how much more it could be if I just put a little more time into it, but that's just me, I guess.
I totally agree with you. I don't understand why there hasn't been a big push. I guess that probably being under a large corporate umbrella like Hasbro probably has a decent amount to do with it. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got red tape that's tying their hands, kind of. Mm-hmm. And then I do know that one of the number one things is they have to make sure whatever they develop is as secure as possible, because this isn't like a subscription model. You know, people have collections that are worth $10,000. Mm-hmm. You cannot afford to rush something out and then have like all of your databases destroyed. And then, I mean, maybe you can, but it doesn't seem to me like you could.
Yeah, that seems like a PR nightmare if we've learned anything from Sony and, you know, companies like that.
So I think it would be worse than anything like that, because the values of the accounts are just so insane compared to pretty much any game I can think of. Maybe like EVE Online or something has accounts that are that expensive. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. So in 2011, Chris, you took part in something called the Online Community Cup. Tell me what that experience was like for you. I believe you won, correct?
Unlike last year's team, yes, we did win.
That's fantastic. Tell me about it.
Well, it was crazy fun, but also exhausting. I actually went to a Grand Prix immediately after.
Oh,
one of the nice things that Wizards allowed was for me to fly there from one city and then fly back to the Grand Prix city. Okay. And I think that LSV actually did the same, because if I remember right, he won that Grand Prix.
Oh, nice.
Which is a pretty insane week for him. Go hang out with the Wizards all week and then go win a Grand Prix.
Right.
But like the days would start, we would have some sort of pre-lunch, like non-gaming event, and then eat a meal, play Magic all afternoon, eat a meal, and then do some sort of into the evening event, then hang out late, and like I would work when I woke up and work before I go to bed. But it was tons of fun, getting to learn a lot more about the people that work for Wizards. The Magic Online guys, Chris Kierwitz, Lee Sharp, Worth, all great folks. We saw a lot of R&D too, but for me, the meeting the business people behind Magic Magic Online was a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it different than it is now? Like, were you nominated to go? Did it still work the same that way?
I actually don't know why I was recognized. Okay. Not to say that I wasn't worthy, guys.
Okay.
But there definitely wasn't really campaigning for it at the time. This was the third Community Cup, and it was kind of the first one that had heavier coverage. We didn't do any streaming. I was actually really bummed because I wanted to take my laptop and record all my matches. And then I tried to also get Wizards to put desktop recording on our personal computers so I could record them and share them with our viewership. But I'm pretty sure that they just didn't have time to figure out if they could do it or not, so they told me no. But the I just got an email one day that was like, "Hey, Chris, you've been invited to the Community Cup. Would you like to go?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. Let me tell my professors that I can't come to class that week." But I will guess as to why I was invited. I did the editing for Magic, or for MTGO Academy at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I also had spent a lot of hours organizing one of the communities within Magic Online for 100 Card Singleton. I talked to like 120 players and then took all the feedback and composed a list and emailed it to Wizards to try to get events added. Mm-hmm. That they ended up actually adding like a weekend fringe format challenge event.
Okay.
Which were so much fun. Like I like Magic as competition, but I prefer to deck build a lot more than I like to just play games.
You said you don't like Magic as competition.
Well, no, I just am stumbling over my words.
Oh, no, I was curious as to why that was. That's a totally fine opinion to have.
What I actually meant to say is I like competitive Magic, but I don't want to just like bash Delver versus Valakut or something. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to build a deck and then do well with that deck. So, like, the deck building, like, the creative process of building a deck is a big portion of how I enjoy Magic. So, like, I cube a lot, I draft a lot. And these fringe formats allow you to build decks a lot more because there's not as many people trying to figure out, like, what the best deck is, so it doesn't come out as quickly. And then they put up tournaments for these events, and the prize pool was really good, so... Like the Magic Online grinders would join and you would get a good competitive player pool, but eventually they were cut, and I imagine it's because they were basically subsidized, paying out way too many prizes for what they took in.
Interesting. So there's been a lot of fuss made lately about the fact that the Community Cup focuses just on the online side of things and that they don't necessarily recognize people who do great things that aren't online related. How do you feel about that? Do you think that it should stay in online Community Cup, or do you feel that it should eventually be open to anybody who contributes to the community?
I think it should be open to anyone. It is a little bit more open. I'm pretty sure that there have been people that have been invited to the Community Cup that maybe have only logged into Magic Online a couple times and played, or at least they don't play a lot. They're not like just Magic Online community members. Like Graham from Loading Ready Run was invited to the Community Cup that I went to. And before then, I think that he just really liked Magic, and Wizards saw that they were talking about Magic in their videos on like the Escapist. And then they're like, "Wow, this is cool. People that are making high quality content about other games also like our games, and they're bringing exposure from another crowd." And that's kind of, so it's not just people that sit on Magic Online or work for a Magic Online related company. It's people that do stuff for Magic as a game, even if they're not like pro players. I know, was it like Conley and Jackie Lee were the big pro players that were invited last year?
Yeah.
And I know both of them play on Magic Online, but I would argue that they're much more paper players than they are Magic Online players. I mean, they're not playing 12 hours a day where they're playing like 5 4 round events in that 12 hours. So it's definitely, even though it's called the Magic Online Community Cup, probably more just like the Magic Community Recognition event or something.
So what role would you say the Community Cup actually serves for the community?
For the community?
Like, would you say it's an important event to have, or do you think it's something that could maybe be, you know, done away with or replaced with something else, or is there something else that, that does what it does?
I like that it's a high-profile event that the participants aren't all just successful Magic players.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that there is another side to the Magic community in event coverage. Like,
mm-hmm.
there are people, the Community Cup that I went to had two gentlemen that were invited for work that they did, basically just helping Magic Online get better. One of them spent a lot of time in the forums talking with new users and helping them figure out answers to their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then another guy played on the closed beta all the time and would help organize like bug fixing and problem solving sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So like these guys were taking time out of their own lives just to make the game better. I was wondering your Magic Online experience, like how did you get into the game in the digital realm? I know that I was listening to some of your back podcast to kind of see what I was getting myself into by agreeing this. I don't think it was bad.
No.
But the reasons that you decided to explore Magic Online, and then like how have your experiences been beyond the random rage fests?
I actually was a late bloomer to Magic Online. I think I opened my account almost a year ago. I remember it wasn't until after Gen Con. I had just met Liz and Nathan, some very dear friends of mine. And I remember Nathan was really big in the online cubes. So if you were at Gen Con last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, if you remember in the back of the main room where the J statue was, close to the J statue, there were these computers there where you could do the online cubes. And I remember Nathan spent a lot of his time there, and I didn't even know what a cube was. So that confused me, number one. And then number two, I was like, well, what are they doing online? And I didn't even know that there was a Magic Online. And I got to see it, and it looked really, really cool. And Nathan explained that you didn't have to pay a monthly fee for it, that you paid a one-time $10 fee, and then it was yours. And I was like, well, that sounds cool. And he explained that you can buy packs online, or you can buy singles or whatever. And because of Nathan's suggestion, I went ahead and tried it. And I wasn't seeing a lot of paper play at the time. Like, I was getting my F&Ms in, but I wasn't really getting anything more than that. And at the time, I really didn't know what I was going to use the online client for. And people use it for different things. And at the time, I was like, well, I'm going to use it as practice. Like, I'm going to practice for paper events online. And I didn't understand at the time that, number one, you needed to have your own deck, and whatever deck you had on paper, you had to bring there, which can be expensive. And I also didn't understand the fact that the metagames are very different. So, you know, I would play online and do really, really well. And then I would go to a paper event and get killed, or the opposite would happen. And I would be like, but I didn't face these decks, and why are these decks here? And that was very confusing to me. And then, you know, as time went on, I started to really just kind of appreciate it for what it is and what it could do for me. And, you know, I realized that using it for practice is probably not the best thing. And, you know, trying to maintain two collections is probably not the best thing. And so now I have a very casual attitude about it. You know, if I really want to do a pre-release and I just can't get enough of a new set, I will do the online pre-releases. If I, you know, want to kill time, and like the deck I'm playing right now is Golgari Control, which is very cheap to put together. So it wasn't very expensive for me to build it online. So I was like, well, I'll build that deck online and putz around for a little bit, but I don't use it for any serious purposes. I don't need it. I'm very fortunate to have a lot of events in my real life I can go to. But I think, like you said earlier in the show, for what it was made to do, it does very well. If I didn't have any stores in my area, I would be playing on that more often. You know, and you know, one of the things I hear from people who follow me who maybe still play WoW is they say, well, God, I'd love to get back into Magic again, but I have no one to play with, or the cards are too expensive. And I will say, well, cards tend to be cheaper online, or, you know, you can play with someone 24/7 online. So I think it does, you know, fill those gaps that a lot of people use as an excuse for why they can't play Magic. And I think it does that really well. So I just happen to not need it for those purposes.
Have you noticed your technical play improving at all from playing Magic Online?
Yes. I noticed specifically the turn, like the way the turns work. Like there were times where I didn't realize that I could react to things. And again, this was all stuff I learned in the last year. So I'm still learning, and I'm not a total noob, but I think we're all learning. I think we're all, capable of that. And yeah, there were times where, something would happen and the client would ask me, "Do you want to respond to this?" And I would just sort of click through it, like, "Why is it asking me this? I don't have a response." And then there were times where I would have a response and I'd be like, oh. And then that was something that I was able to carry over into my paper games, where I knew, really how many parts of a turn there were and how many things I could interact with and how I didn't have to just let things happen. And
Yeah.
yeah, I definitely took that away from Magic Online, for sure.
Like that there are five parts to combat. I mean, I bet that a ton of players don't realize that after damage is dealt, there's still like another step of combat.
Yeah, I actually encountered that this weekend. I was at a sealed event and I had tried to, I was using Smite against somebody. And he had tried saying that combat was over, and I waited too long, and I was like, I'm pretty sure we're at the tail end of combat and I can still smite your guy. And he called the judge over, and the judge was like, until you say something or indicate that it's your end step, it's still in combat, and she has every right to do that. And again, that's something else I learned from Magic Online that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't seen that broken down for me like that. So.
That's kind of the feedback that I've been getting from a lot of our local players. One of my friends owns an LGS, and I'll go hang out there and just kind of talk with the people, see who's tried Magic Online, what their opinions are on it. And it's the little things that it really helps you on, like realizing all the steps, or like how to really pass priority when you're playing paper. Because one of the things that I remember when I first started was, I mean, you're playing spells, and then when someone plays something and they have a counterspell, they're just like, no! Where now it's like, I cast a spell, and then I'm like, do you have responses? And then they say yes or no.
Yeah, I even learned something last night even. I was again, I'm playing Golgari Control and I use Desecration Demons, and I didn't know that even on turns that the demon can't do anything, the opponent still has the option to sacrifice something. So if there was one turn where I had just cast the demon, it had summoning sickness, and then the client, mentioned that the opponent can sacrifice a creature, and I was like, "But he can't attack." And then I was like, "Okay." And then, I didn't know that. And then there are times where, oh God, what else was the situation? I think it was, I don't remember. And then I also learned that you don't even have to attack. So even if your desecration demon, has the means to, you can still be like, "Would you like to sacrifice a creature?" And then they do, and you're like, I don't want to attack anyway. And you can sort of fake them out like that. I didn't know that. And that's something I learned just this week. And I thought I knew mostly, how my deck runs. And then that's something else I can integrate into real life as well. So that's cool too. I didn't know that.
And that's what Magic Online does well. So even though I've been sitting here griping about it a little bit, like all of these little intricacies that happen in a game, you see them in Magic Online. Like you learn things that your cards can do that you had no idea. Especially with how they respond and stuff like Cabal. Are you familiar with Cabal Therapy?
Yes.
Where any of the cards that have like name a card, you don't name a card until your opponent says, okay, that spell's happening. What do you name? And like players don't realize that if they're playing paper, they'll be like Cabal Therapy, naming Brainstorm. And their opponent will just be like, Brainstorm, okay, here's my hand. You hit nothing.
Right. Yeah, I would say though, while we're talking about things we like about Magic Online, I am going to criticize it a little bit here. Two things
Okay.
bother me about Magic Online. Number one, the timer. The
Tick,
fact that you can lose a
tock.
game, yeah, that bugs the fuck out of me because I've lost games to that. And it's like, what? Like, that's not okay. And that annoys me because that technically doesn't exist in, I mean, we have timers in real
Yeah.
life, but it's not the same.
Well, I actually would say, sorry to cut you off,
Sure.
that I am pissed in paper that my opponents can take a ton of time and I still get a draw. That, like, I played at Grand Prix Columbus, that's modern, and I was playing Storm and played against like a Urzatron deck round one.
Okay.
And the matchup is basically a buy for Storm, or it's supposed to be close to a buy for Storm.
Okay.
but between my slow shuffling and my opponent's slow decision making, we drew. And I'm just like, oh my, like, I traveled to this Grand Prix, I've actually been practicing with my deck, I can't believe that I drew round one. Maybe I should have just practiced shuffling for a week.
The other thing I don't like about Magic Online is the regeneration shield business. Like, so I was playing Kibler's Ooze deck a while back when I first started getting Magic Online, and that deck was really well known for tanking something like, you know, Lot Left Troll or Predator Ooze, something really resilient, and then using Uvenwald Tracker to fight your opponent's creatures. And, you know, if it was Predator Ooze, obviously it was indestructible, but if it was the Troll, you could pay one black to regenerate it. And there were so many... What was that?
The Wolfair creature, right?
Right. Wolfair Avenger was another one. Yeah, and there were times where I would try to fight and the Lotless Troll would die. And I was like, I paid, where did my regen go? And people were like, you have to hit control and like create a shield or do this stuff. And I'm like, this is hard. Like, what's going on? And that made me not want to use that strategy, because for the longest time, I couldn't figure out why my own creatures were dying. And then again, people would look at me like, fucking noob. And it's like, no, I know that it wasn't supposed to happen like that. And people would just sort of point at me and laugh and be like, she's killing her own creatures. And that made it a little not fun for me.
Yeah, especially if you're playing in like a heads up event or an event that you paid money for.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm about to demolish this guy. He doesn't know what's coming. Okay, this deck is awesome. Your guy dies.
Yeah.
Wait, where'd my guy go?
Yeah.
But one of the things is, in paper, if you didn't announce it right, and then your opponent could probably argue in a high rules enforcement that your guy dies. But then it wouldn't be like, the program sucks. Mm-hmm. You just be like, oh man, my opponent is a D. Oh my God.
Misclicks are something too. You know, I've heard people that have accidentally, you know, would you like to mulligan? You click on the wrong thing, or you tap something you're not supposed to, or you tap the wrong mana, or you know,
misclicks
that's
are, yeah.
Yeah.
Misclicks are horrible. I actually have videos. I make video content for our website occasionally.
I know, I've watched them.
I probably shouldn't do it, because definitely if you're making videos playing Magic the Gathering, make them a lot. You get into like a good conversational flow, and there's not a lot of downtime if you're making them a lot. But once you stop and go back to it, it's kind of awkward. And that's where my videos are right now. They're kind of awkward. Anyway, so I've definitely played games that I was recording and I'm like, what does it say? Would you like to mulligan? Yes, no. Or something. I think that's the exact wording. Would you like to mulligan? Mm-hmm. And then it's yes, no. And I'll be talking, making a video, and I'll be like, hell yeah, I want to keep this hand. Yes. Oh, no. Or like, you get into this reflex. Do you use the function keys to play, or do you just actually click OK every time?
I click OK every time.
Okay. I use the function keys, so that actually helps with your clock management a lot once you get the function keys down. So I'm pressing F2, which is like pressing OK, and I'll get into a good rhythm, and then all of a sudden I realize that I just pressed F2 when I needed to respond. Then you're just sitting there staring. You're like, no, I didn't want that to resolve. That's not OK.
Yeah.
What did I just do? And they're like, no, my knight.
Yeah. Human error is definitely a thing that we really don't have to worry about. Well, I mean, it's a different kind of human error. I mean, we can make misplays in person, but it's just it's in a whole different atmosphere when you're online.
You own a misplay.
Like, yeah.
That's just a bad decision you made. If you misclick, it's like, my finger twitched. And then now I've definitely like cast a draw, like Ancestral Visions, that came off a suspend targeting my opponent because I was dragging my mouse down and it just clicked on my opponent's avatar. So I'm like, yeah, that does not happen in paper. How many people say targeting you? Oh no, I mean me. And then like agree to let their opponent draw three cards.
That probably doesn't happen very much.
I would say probably three times in the history of Magic the Gathering.
Possibly. That's a generous number.
I like to be on the safe side.
Better safe than sorry. Exactly. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to you, Chris, and they want to know more about the website, where can they find you? Where can they find the site?
Well, our website is mtgoacademy.com. Mm-hmm. And I believe that all of my content can be found by just searching Chris Kuhl, mm-hmm. not Chris Kiel. We actually had a conversation before this podcast how to pronounce my last name. And sometimes I tell people it's Chris Kuhl, so I can understand how it gets mispronounced. Anyway, it's Chris Kuhl mm-hmm. with a K, like the cigarettes, but I do not endorse smoking, guys. Just so you know. But it's
me neither.
Like the cigarettes. So if you search Chris Kuhl on our website, you'll find all of my content. And I also tweet on the MTGO Academy Twitter, which is just at MTGO Academy.
Mm-hmm. Now, does MTGO Academy take submissions from writers, or do you have your own stable? How does that work?
We do take submissions. I'm very fortunate to have an amazing editor. He is a graduate student at Harvard, so all he does is write. And he works with all of our content providers. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't take a lot of, like, one-time submissions. We like to develop a rapport and have like series with our writers. Mm-hmm. But if you're interested in writing, you can always email AJ at mtgoacademy.com.
It's interesting. I actually have a little confession for you, Chris. Mm-hmm. When I had first started getting involved in the Magic community, before I decided that I wanted to do a podcast, I was going to try blogging first because that's sort of what I'm comfortable with. And before I knew what MTGO even stood for, and before I knew that you guys were strictly online, I actually had looked at your website and I was on your contribution page and I was like, huh, I should write submissions for you guys. And then I realized that you have to have an MTGO account, which I didn't have at the time, but you guys were actually one of the first websites I found ever. And that I was like, I should totally write for them. And if I would have had an online account, I would have submitted you guys something and I could be writing for you right now.
You would probably love it. I mean, AJ is fantastic. He's actually my roommate at one period. I love the guy. Mm-hmm. But he's even better at being an editor than he is at being a roommate.
Fantastic. I look forward to, and you said you'll be at Gen Con, correct?
Yes.
Will any of the other staff be there?
I don't believe anyone else will be in town. Our staff, I mean, we might have like contributors that are coming in. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure though. Last year was definitely a lot different than this year is going to be, since the World Magic Cup isn't at Gen Con, mm-hmm. which maybe is a little bit of a bum, but I hope to be playing Cube like at least 3 days.
So you're not going to play any Cube, paper magic?
Cube. No. Cube paper with all the people that are into the building cubes and playing them community.
I was going to say, if you go to Gen Con and spend all that time huddled up by the computers, which you already do, I will find you and bop you on the head and be like, go out and live.
I'm not playing Magic Online, even if there is a way to play it at Gen Con. No way.
I will look for you. I will make sure.
Cool. Now that I have your contact information, we should get together and play some games. And anyone else that is listening to this podcast this far, I'm sorry that you've had to hear me talk for an hour. But yeah, come to Gen Con if you're in the Midwest and you have a weekend off. It's amazing. Great weekend of gaming.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. And I really, really appreciate you coming on the show, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And if anyone's listening to the show and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. After that, you can find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to pick up some episodes and leave me a positive review while you're at it. If you have any feedback for me, you can always find me on Twitter at OriginalOestrus, OriginalOestrus. Or if you want to reach me on a more personal level, you can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye. We don't wanna go home, but we can't have control.